Hunting can be a very interesting topic, especially in the world of scary stories. It seems no matter where you are in the world, you just might stumble upon something unexplainable out there in the woods. Welcome back to the swamp, my friends. It's good to see you made it back for another video. Today, we're going to be sharing some allegedly true and creepy as hell hunting stories sent in by viewers just like you. If you have a story you would like to share in a future video, whether it's a hunting story or something else, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this show going. Now, without further ado, let's get into these creepy and allegedly true hunting experiences that'll keep you up tonight. A couple of years back when I was in high school, my friend, let us call him A, invited me to go hog hunting out on his property in Gonzales County, Texas. Property was a pecan orchard that backed up to a river in the area, and my friend's family had been hunting there for many years. Usually it was dove and deer, but with the recent and growing nuisance that is the feral hog population, that's what they focus on. The first time we went out was without incident, but then we decided to invite some more people. Bringing my brother Z and his friend Jay, we had been friends for some time now, and formed a group we had called the Boys. Anyway, it was late December when we went out, and we would be staying in a cabin on the property, or at least that was the plan. The cabin had two main rooms, a sunroom, which had been added on later, with windows on every wall, and the main room in the cabin with the kitchen area, bathroom, and beds. There were only three beds, one of which was a trundle bed, and a pull-out couch in the sunroom. Both the trundle and pull-out couch had not been used in quite some time, so they had more than a few spiderwebs and other unpleasant things infesting them. Z and Jay said hell no to freezing in the sunroom and the spiders, so they ended up sleeping in the car for the night. Now, the whole group was well acquainted with the paranormal, and we would joke about seeing skinwalkers or wendigos on the trip, even though we knew they were not in these parts of the country. We even joked about Yeehaw Yoshi, a play on the Navajo name for the skinwalker, Yeehaw Lushi. We were playing around, saying it would come and visit us in the night. We arrived at the property around noon, unloaded our guns and belongings from the cars, and settled into the cabin. We spent the day messing around and looking around the property. Around 5, we decided to head to the nearest town for barbecue, and then came back and headed out to our makeshift blind before sundown. We waited at the blind until it was too dark to shoot, and headed back to the cabin, freezing our butts off the entire time. When we got back to the cabin, we made a fire, and while we hung out around it, I found some stupid green text about skinwalkers, and read it to the group. After a little while, we decided to have some fun and walk around the orchard in the dark, just hoping we would see something. During the walk, we were all on edge because we could all tell there was something around us. Deer and the like, but shining our lights around only made the walk even creepier. Seeing a whole herd of deer and their eyeshine looking right at you is not a very comforting feeling. After we got too cold to continue, we headed back and got ready for the morning. We were going to go sit at the blind again. While we were gathering our stuff, A noticed that our hog call was nowhere to be found, and Z found Jay's rifle outside, fully loaded, even though I remember watching Jay empty it inside the cabin. We just brushed it off as us being forgetful, and we all went to bed. A and I in the cabin, Z and Jay out in Jay's car. A quickly went to sleep, but I stayed up a bit longer watching YouTube because I was not really tired. Now, here's where I should mention that I suffer from night terrors. Despite being in my late teens, although I had not had one in at least 5 years by the time of the trip, they were still a possibility. Despite that fact, I know I was not tired, and I was not asleep. My bed was right next to a window that looked out into the yard of the cabin, and A's bed had a window that looked into the sunroom. But because the sunroom was all windows, you could see out into the lower part of the orchard, towards the river. It was about midnight, and I rolled over, so I was facing away from the window near my bed. And when I rolled over, through A's window and the sunroom windows, I saw a tall figure walking right next to the sunroom. It was way too dark for me to discern any features aside from the shape and size. I woke up A and told him I saw someone walking outside, and he groggily suggested it was probably Z or J, taking a pee. But I rejected that, because why would they walk all the way near the cabin to take a pee outside when they could just go right outside the car? It doesn't make any sense. Not only that, but the figure was much too tall to be either of them, because the taller of the two was only 5'8". A just ignored me, and said it was probably a neighbor messing with us, even though we had been shooting all day, and anyone who tries to mess with people that armed is thoroughly stupid. I tried to pass it off. A texted our group chat, retelling what I had seen, and then we went to sleep. In the morning, Z and J told us that they were actually planning on coming into the cabin because it was so cold out in the car, but they said F that when they saw the messages in the group chat. They also said they had heard tapping on the window to the car around the same time I saw the figure, but they didn't see anything and just assumed it was A or me trying to mess with them. They also said that they heard the hog call in the orchard, and they were sure it was the call because it was very distinct. Though, a hog might not be able to tell, a human can definitely discern it was a call and not a hog. But they mentioned that the call sounded almost distorted when they heard it, as though it were being used by something that didn't produce a sound as we did. After we had talked about what happened in the night, we got ready to go out to the blind before the sun came up. But as A was putting on his camo pants, he noticed there was something in his pocket. It was a pecan, and he swears that he did not put it there. There is no way it could fall into his pocket either, because his pocket had a Velcro flap covering it. After that, we went and sat out without any more incidents. The next day, when we finally started packing to leave, A found the hog call underneath his bed, even though, when we were searching for it, we both checked there and never saw it. I know this can all be chalked up to an overactive imagination, but I know what I saw, and I believe my friends. On a side note, ever since that trip, I have had night terrors or some odd incident every time we've gone hunting since. I hope one day that we catch something that is a little less poor seen and a little more supernatural. I live in north central Texas in a rural area. My own town has less than 900 people in total. The next big town is quite a ways away. Most of the land is cleared out into barren pastures for cattle. Any land not cleared is covered in thickets of barbed up mesquite trees and thick, wiry woods, especially up around the lake. We live right on the lake, a 10-minute walk down to the water. It's all grown up thick down there except the areas we clear out for fishing spots. Several little islands covered in thick woods too throughout the lake. Pretty often, I would go out there with my stepdad in kayaks or our little rowboat, and we'd go run jug lines. From where we got in, we could go past some of the tiny islands and up the channel that led into the creeks. We always had airsoft pistols to scare off snakes from getting too close to our boats, and one of us would always have a small revolver or a rifle to scare off whatever else. We always went late at night around 11 p.m. when the catfish and shad started feeding, and would stay out there for hours. We didn't have to worry about anything in the water, but if we got out on certain baby islands or on kind of the sandbar areas in the middle of the channel, you had to watch for pigs, bobcats, mountain lions, and more snakes. I had seen the pigs before. We're overrun with them, and it's been quite a while since we've had this problem, and they get huge. They had certain areas they stayed in, though, so we did not worry about them all that much. The bobcats would run when they saw us usually, if you stand up to show off your size, and the mountain lions were less common, but sometimes you could see their eyes in the dark. They will stalk your boat if they can, but they usually won't touch the water. Usually, we can even do a little pop with the rifle, and they'll leave. They are freaky, though, and we can hear them miles away. They sound like a woman screeching. I imagine they are what a banshee sounds like. So, there are a few things to worry about, but honestly not too much. There is nothing bigger, either. There is nothing like bears here, and there's nothing that I've ever seen even close to it. This one night, though, a few months ago, we went out with one of my stepdad's friends. It was a good night. We had just baited and dropped all of our jugs, and we rowed the boat to one of the more cleared bars so we could get out and go to the bathroom. I stayed in the boat with one of the guns and the spotlight so I could watch for pigs and snakes. It was easy to scare yourself out there, seeing things pass by the trees. You just learn to ignore the feeling. They were not gone long before I could hear crunches and snaps in the distance. I yelled to them what I heard because it was usually pigs if it was that loud. My stepdad and his friend did not answer. He was probably out exploring a bit. He had always done that. Trekking around here had never bothered him since he grew up trekking through Mississippi. I didn't hear the sounds anymore, but I watched the thickets harder while I untied the boat just in case they needed to just run. It felt like they were gone 20 minutes or so, and I was getting anxious. Finally, I could hear my stepdad and his friend yelling in the distance. The closer they got, I could hear the crunches again louder. While he yelled at me to untie the boat like I already had, he kept yelling at me to get the rifle up and get on the far side of the boat. I was freaking out. When I could see them clearing their way through, the sounds were behind them, but still getting louder, and I realized this was not underbrush being crunched down, but it was the sound of tree limbs snapping and cracking. It was so loud when my stepdad jumped in the boat, he kept yelling at me to keep aiming while we started the motor. His friend was already paddling us away from the shore in the middle of the channel. I could still hear the sounds, but I never saw anything. Nothing ever followed us into the water. After that, we left the jugs and took his friend straight back to the cars. He was shaking so hard he just bolted up to the cars. My stepdad had calmed down by then, and we went back to go get the jug lines. He steered the boat and held the rifle while I pulled up the lines. He would not answer me when I asked what happened. He just said it was a big pig he told me about the other day. But I noticed he was keeping us in the dead center of the channel. All the lines we had were near the shore, and he would tell me they were empty even though I could see them moving. When we were pulling everything back up to the house, we took it together at once instead of the several separate trips we usually made. He told me not to tell my mom, but he did not know what it was, and he hadn't wanted to scare me while we were out there. He told me they were looking on the bar for good spots on the far side when they heard it coming, and it chased them the whole way back. He said it was so loud and huge. It would be too big to be a bear, and neither of them took a chance to look back at it. We do not have Bigfoot stories or anything like that around here, so we didn't know what to think, but we really have not been fishing or hunting in that area since. When I was 15, maybe 16, I went on a hunting trip with my cousin. My cousin Austin was 2 years older than me, and a much skilled hunter. But despite our 2 years age difference, we were still incredibly good friends. The day we had planned to go bow hunting for deer, Austin's parents were not home, and I was dropped off at his house at 5 p.m. After we were done prepping our gear, we grabbed our bows and ran to the two-person hunting stand located in the middle of the woods. As we walked to the stand, I realized something strange. Besides the twigs and fallen leaves crunching under our boots, it was completely silent. No birds, no crickets, no squirrels, nothing. The thought of a large predator roaming the area crossed my mind, but the thought soon slipped from my head. After all, we had bows and arrows. We could defend ourselves if need be. After climbing up the ladder, Austin and I just sat there, recalling the good times and quietly whispering. We waited for a couple of hours, not seeing any signs of deer. As the sun slowly began to set on the mountainous horizon, just as the last sign of natural light slipped beyond view, I saw something large dart behind a tree. The thing moved way too fast for me to see what it was, but thinking it could be a big deer, I got excited and I whispered to Austin, "Hey, I just saw something move behind those trees. I don't know how big it was, but it moved really fast and it's pretty dark out here." "Could be a big buck," Austin suggested. "Well, let us wait and see. Get your bow ready." We waited and waited for 10 minutes or so. We sat there in anticipation, but nothing came out from behind the trees. Austin threw a big stick at the cluster of trees where I had last spotted the thing. Right after he did that, though, A pair of glowing white eyes poked out from behind the trees. Then, the animal, or whatever this thing was, walked out of the trees and into the clearing in front of us, showing itself in entirety. At first glance, the creature looked like a normal buck, except it was huge. Absolutely enormous. Standing on its four legs, the deer thing was about 12 feet tall. Its antlers were longer than my total height. Then, the deer stood up. Do not get me wrong, the deer was not sitting or anything. But when I say this deer stood up, I mean it stood up on its hind legs, like a person. But it did not go back to its original position. It just kept standing there. That is when I noticed that the deer had very strange features. Some patches of fur were gone, and in their place looked to be rotted and decomposing skin that was stretched over the deerskin's skeletal frame. Based on the horrified and confused look on Austin's face, he noticed the features too. Not thinking very straight, I loaded my arrow into the bow, and right before I let go of the string, the deer thing's head snapped in my direction. My blood ran cold as the deer thing opened its mouth and screeched, revealing long, razor-sharp teeth. That was when the thought ran across my mind. This thing was not a deer. I let go of the string and the arrow flew right beside the deer, missing it, just a little bit and hitting a log. It screeched, and I screamed, "Austin, what is that thing? How am I supposed to know? Shoot it!" I watched as the deer thing charged at the hunting stand, and the exact same moment Austin shot the deer with his bow. The arrow was a direct hit. The arrow slammed into the deer thing's shoulder, and the deer fell flat on its back, screeching. I loaded my arrow, let go of the string, and I missed again. Instead of getting a kill shot, Austin quickly climbed down the hunting stand's ladder, and I followed shortly. As I ran through the clearing and down the trail, I looked back and saw the deer thing getting back up, looking dead into my eyes. I kept running. I ran, and ran, and ran, up to the point to where I could not even breathe. I ran faster than I thought was even humanly possible. When I broke out of the forest with Austin, I leaned over and vomited onto some bushes. Then, we ran inside, locking the door behind us. Austin grabbed his dad's shotgun, and I stuck with my bow. 2 minutes after we came inside, I spotted the deer thing emerging from the woods. It spotted us in the house. Standing at the tree line, it stared at us with malicious intent. While we cowered in the safety of Austin's house, the deer thing stared at us for a couple of more minutes. Then it went back into the forest, leaving me very relieved. The following events were not a blur. They're very vivid. I called the police and they came, followed by Austin's parents and mine. But instead of making me feel safer and more relieved, the police officers who came put me even more on edge. No, they did not scare us directly. It was what they said that scared us. The police told us that recently, people had been going missing in those woods, and that nearby homeowners had seen an enormous deer standing upright, wandering through the forest. 9 months later, we still talk about the incident, and we talk about that creature that had been there, because it was definitely not a deer. At least not a normal one, at least. Austin and I have made a few assumptions on what the creature could be. Austin's thought was maybe a new subspecies of carnivorous deer, but I immediately shot that idea down. The deer thing had rotting flesh on it, and it stood on its hind legs, and yet it moved with such ease and speed. Then I came up with a good theory. It is slightly unbelievable, and maybe unrealistic, but is the best I came up with. The creature we possibly saw might have been a real-life Wendigo. My story takes place on the Big Island of Hawaii when I was 10 or 11 years old. My dad was into hunting wild boars and sheep. Sometimes he would take the family with him to stay at the cabin that my uncles had built. I can't say exactly where the cabin is located, but to get there, you'd have to take a turn off the main highway onto an unmarked road, then drive about an hour up the mountain, off-road through the woods to reach the cabin and hunting grounds. It's a small one-story cabin, and the front door is just a sliding glass door. Across from the sliding door are the three bedrooms that had two bunk beds in each room. No doors. The bathroom was just an outhouse with no light or running water. We had to walk through some bushes and trees to get to it. It was a nice little spot overall, not ventilated well and cold but quaint. I couldn't help but feel like there were a lot of spirits there, mostly because my uncle said that a huge battle took place near the cabin during ancient times. I immediately thought, dang, night marchers. To some, night marchers are just part of Hawaiian folklore, but to native Hawaiians they are very real. I was already creeped out by the place. I remember feeling very vulnerable. At some point during the hunting trip, my cousin, sister, and I started wandering around outside one of the cabins in the open area. It was basically a field of lava rock covered with grass, weeds, and trees that lined the outer edges of the perimeter. We were bored, so we grabbed some hammers and started smashing in small lava tubes to see if we could find something. The lava tubes we were smashing weren't giant like caves, but small, hollow pockets or bubbles of air that formed during lava flow and hardened over time. You could just tap your shoe on them and could tell by the pocket of the sound. Well, let's just say, be careful what you wish for, because one lava tube in particular had something in it. We smash one, look inside, and what we saw sent a chill down our spines. It was a pile of bones, sitting on a long, brown bird feather. It looked like human bones, but also some kind of animal. Maybe a chicken? Okay, you're thinking, wow, that's not scary. But the bones, I swear, were perfectly preserved and still had some pink-reddish color to it. They seemed almost fresh. So we started pondering on how the bones got in there. There was physically no way a person could put those in there. And why did they not get destroyed by the lava? The bones had to have been there for hundreds of years because the volcano was no longer active. It was as if the lava flow went around the bones and hardened over it. The only explanation we could think of was that it was an offering to Pele, the fire goddess, and that we shouldn't mess with it. We immediately covered the opening with rocks and got the heck out of there. We never told our parents about it. The next morning, my dad asked us if anyone ever went to the outhouse early in the morning. We all say no. He says, weird. I woke up and saw someone standing in the door. I thought maybe someone had gone to the bathroom. We looked at each other horrified. What if it was that person that left the offerings and we disturbed it? Or maybe it was the ghost of the person's remains there, I don't know. My dad tried to play it off like maybe it was just him dreaming. But I was terrified, fearing I disturbed someone's offering to the gods and they were mad at me. It could have been a human, but it seemed unlikely given our location. There were no other cabins or homes built at the hunting grounds. Either way, I never stayed there again. Here's an experience that I've never shared with anyone, and I just can't really find a solid explanation for it. This is my first time ever writing a story, so I'm sorry if it doesn't read well. I'm not that great of a writer. This occurred in the summer of 2010. My stepdad has an old hunting cabin out in Sigil, Pennsylvania. Like a 10-minute drive outside of Cook's Forest. It's a small place with a common area and kitchen, and a single bedroom with two bunk beds and a queen-size bed. My mom, stepdad, and I stayed at the cabin for a weekend to get rid of all the trash other family members had left there and also do some repairs. There are other cabins nearby, but this weekend, there wasn't anybody else at the cabins within a half a mile. There is also no streetlights or even cell service. This is quite literally off the beaten path in the middle of the forest. We came up Friday, worked all day Saturday, and left Sunday. Saturday evening, after dinner and a bonfire, everything was pitch black outside. There were no bugs chirping, and it was dead quiet, which is relatively normal for the area. At least, most of the time. It's pretty quiet at nights here. We decided to head in for the night. Stepdad and I are inside reading, while my mom steps out to have a smoke and to check to see if the fire was burned down safely. As I am mid-page in my book, I hear my mom yelp pretty loudly. Now I'm used to her making this yelp. She's done it when she sees a snake or gets a bug in her hair, so I didn't think too much of it. She comes in limping, saying someone threw a rock at me. Immediately, my dad grabs his gun and runs outside, hoping to catch who did it. I was in shock, not sure what to think. I'm sitting with my mom while he made his laps around the cabin. He fired a few shots at the backstop we have set up on the back of the property to try to scare off whoever or whatever was around. Both of my parents never said they saw anyone run off, or even make any noise. Now, when we go up, we always make jokes about Bigfoot, and to be clear, there were no cabins on the road near us that people were staying at, so I don't know who would be lurking in the woods in the pitch blackness, messing around with people. Thanks for listening to these creepy and allegedly true hunting horror stories. If you enjoyed these stories sent in by viewers just like you, be sure to hit that like button, as it helps me out a ton in the YouTube algorithm. If you're new to the swamp, why not join us? Hit that subscribe button and be sure to turn on notifications to never miss a new video. I upload them every single day. I upload them almost every single day, and all things natural and supernatural. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, whether it's a hunting experience or something else, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that truly help keep this show going. If you're on the go and you want to bring your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories with you everywhere you go, you can do that by downloading them on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and just about everywhere else you find your favorite podcast online. The best part of it all is it's absolutely free. I'd love to know what story in this video was your favorite in the comments down below. Also, if you would like to support the Swamp outside of hitting that like button and subscribing, maybe check out the merch store. We've got face masks, t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, and so much more. It'd be greatly appreciated if you check that out. Thank you guys, as always, for supporting the Swamp the way you do. We're getting incredibly close to 195,000 subscribers. I never imagined us getting to this point. Onward and upward to 200,000 swamp-dwelling folk. Also, I'm very close to hitting 10,000 Twitter followers. So, if you'd be interested in helping me hit that 10K club, follow me on Twitter. It's probably the best place to keep up to date with me and to talk to me one-on-one. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.